Hey, Shoujo fans! Welcome to episode 13 of Shoujo Sunday. We will be recapping episodes 1 through 3 of Kageki Shoujo. Let's dig in. Alright, so here is our soft serve summary for Kageki Shoujo Episode 1, Beneath the Cherry Tree in a Rain of Petals. A tale of two girls. We meet Ai Narada, a former member of an idol group called JPX48, at a subway station. She's running away from her male fans when she runs into her uncle named Taichi. We learn that she's applying to be part of KOKA, School of Musical and Theatrical Arts, to become a stage actress. It's an all-girls school for an all-female troupe, and she's quite keen on joining and getting away from men, although Taichi seems to be okay in her book. We also meet Sarasa Watanabe. She's a tall, graceful girl that lives with her grandpa Ken. She's boisterous and bright and immediately attempts to befriend Ai once they are both at KOKA during the admission announcement. Out of 200 applicants, only 40 are accepted, and Sarasa and Ai are part of the 40. Post them taking photos at a cursed cherry blossom tree, they become roommates. At the end of the episode, during their military seminar, Sarasa announces her desire to play Lady Oscar in Rose of Versailles for KOKA's troupe, meaning she wants to be a top star. And that's our summary, you guys. So, as for theme, Gianna, do you have a theme?
I kind of have a theme. I feel like it's more of a theme of the entire show. I've never seen the show, but this is what I'm guessing could probably encapsulate the whole thing. So, this episode really shines a light on the immense pressures and perfectionism aspiring idols and performers face. And that's kind of just what I had.
Yeah, I think that that's perfect.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I think that that's perfect. It just speaks to, especially from the few episodes that we've seen, It definitely speaks to just how much these girls are going through to be part of this school.
Yeah.
Another theme that I had was that there's more to a person than what meets the eye.
Oh, I really like that.
Yeah, so I feel like that could technically, I feel like it just applies to both of our lead girls.
Definitely.
To Ai and Sarasa. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's get into Sprinkle on Top. So I said that the cherry blossom tree, I feel like it symbolizes a lot. Despite the fact that there is this curse that anybody that gets near that tree or under that tree is not going to be a top star, I feel like it was really more of a gauntlet being thrown that, like, yeah, this tree, it might symbolize something to other people, but I feel like it could also be a catalyst at the same time. At least in Sarasa's perspective, like, she wants to break that curse. Which, I don't know if I'm reaching too hard for that to be a sprinkle on top, but that's what I had. Do you have sprinkle on top?
I do feel like something about that curse is going to come back around.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested to see how, if it's just them breaking the curse, or if maybe there was no curse at all, and it's just something that there was a rumor, or maybe going under the tree was actually good luck, and people said it was a curse, so nobody would do it. So that's what I'm wondering.
Right. Yeah.
I do have a subtle sprinkle on top, I guess. And it's a very Gianna sprinkle on top. So, Ai means love, obviously. This is a shoujo. She better fall in love. That's all I'm gonna say.
Oh, okay. I mean, I would like to, but I don't know if we're gonna see.
I have some thoughts.
Well, maybe there's different types of love. Maybe platonic, maybe.
Yeah, well, okay, yes, yes, yes.
I mean, if it's gonna, you know, if it's gonna go into Yuri territory, you know that we're here for it.
I've had very gay thoughts watching this show, and you'll all hear about it.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. I think it will be nice. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll see what happens. I would hope so, because, like, if we can have Yuri on ice, why not? So
why not?
Yeah. So for the opening song is Hoshi no Orchestra by Seiji. I mean, I guess I just like how bright the song is.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the animation for it, it just really suits the vibe of the song.
Yeah, I feel like the animation, especially the color palette, not even just in the opening, but the whole show.
Yeah.
Really popped. It was so beautiful and pleasant to look at. In particular about the song, I really loved the music box intro.
Yeah.
Something like that really grabs my attention personally. So that was a great little touch.
Yeah, I really liked that as well. And I agree about the color palette. I feel like it's just so, from what we've seen, it's so vivid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just helps to enrich the story.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just like the vibe. And then the ending song, I had to listen to that separately, guys, because I don't even think the ending song was in the first episode.
It was not, but it was in the other two that we watched.
Yeah. So the ending song is Hoshi no Tabibito, and it's sung by the voice actresses of Kageki Shoujo, so our lead girls. So the voice actress for Ai and the voice actress for Sarasa, they're the ones that sing it.
I love that. That's great.
I love that too. I didn't realize, I mean, until I was like, you know, sleuthing around to figure out like the meaning behind the song. I didn't know it was them singing it. So I thought that that's a really like nice touch.
Especially with it being a show about performers. That's really amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So that, unless you have another sprinkle on top, that's the only ones that I had.
No, that's all for me.
Okay, so let's get into Floats Your Boat. So right off the bat, I am low-key a history buff, you guys. I was actually like part of like History Honor Society when I was in college.
Oh,
I just love that in starting this new anime, we are getting all of this added information about theater in Japan, like live theater in Japan. I thought that was so cool. The amount of world building that was in this episode, I feel like it's something to be applauded, because it's like we're touching on historical aspects. We're getting into character personalities and stuff. Because of the fact that I love history, I just love that we're like getting to learn more about theater.
Yeah, I really understood the stakes of how important it was to a young girl who wanted to perform, like how high the stakes were to get into that school and what each of the starring roles meant. And it was just a very well executed beginning of a show.
Yeah. Having the show be about theater, it really intensely like reminded me of my love for Glass Mask by Suzu Miyuchi. It's like a classic shoujo anime with like a little like daddy long legs element, but basically like we have a lead girl that wants to be this actress. That's her biggest dream, and she goes through all of these different obstacles just to make this dream happen. And so it just reminded me of that. And then on top of it, I think the fact that this show is paying so much attention to Rose of Versailles, I love that as well. And I feel bad because, Gianna, have you seen Rose of Versailles?
I haven't. I'm such an anime noob.
No, no. It's okay. It's okay. I feel like if I had realized that they were going to be talking like, or at least referencing Rose of Versailles so much, I would have said like, maybe we should have done that first.
Oh,
it is a long anime and it is very emotional.
Ooh.
The time that I watched it on Crunchyroll like a gazillion years ago, I was bawling. The melodrama, it was like soap opera level like stuff happening. And basically like the gist of the story is that there is a character and her name is Lady Oscar, because her father wanted a boy and obviously Oscar was a girl, but he decided to raise Oscar as a boy, which is why he named her Oscar and basically had her like cross-dressing as like a boy even though she wasn't. And she sort of gets tied into the French Revolution, like Marie Antoinette. I know I'm giving this is like a bastardization like summary. I'm just giving the gist so that Gianna can understand.
It sounds really interesting. I would totally watch that.
It's so good. It's just, it's a lot. I feel like like it's a lot in the same sense that like Sailor Moon is a lot. Definitely doesn't have as many seasons, but there's so many episodes and it's a big task to get into. Regardless, so like it's a really like beloved show and it means so much. And like that's like really when you're getting into, oh, you see like a female actress acting as a boy and getting all of this attention. I thought it was perfect that they aligned that with Rose of Versailles because you get very similar vibes from that anime. And I guess it's also a play as well. It just reminded me of like these classics, like going into it.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Something else that we end up learning, and they reference this a lot, is the fact that since Coca is an all-female troupe, there are like roles and names for actresses who play certain parts. So one, if there's a female actress and she's playing a male part, then she's referred to as an otokoyaku, which just translates into like male role. And then the female actresses that play female parts are called musume yaku, which also directly translates to girl role. And they reference this a lot within the first couple of episodes. So I feel like we're just going to be seeing this like throughout the anime.
Yeah, we'll have to get used to the terminology.
Right. That's why I felt the need to just add it in, just because they're going to keep doing it. So it's like, we're going to learn and we're going to pick up on all of these things. And I appreciated them telling us about it. And they said that there are people that really, they see the women who play like the male roles. They see them as being even more gentlemanly than actual men. And there's a certain appeal within that, which is why, like, I totally understand you having, like, Gianna, I totally understand you having Yuri vibes, like the gay vibes. It's going to be coming.
Yeah.
We're at the tip of the iceberg. We're about to get, like, deeper into it and stuff. But I thought that that was cool that they put out so much effort in explaining the world of live theater in Japan, like, what it's like. But to actually get into the episode, like I said earlier, we first meet Ai, who is running away from her male fans. And since we are in Floats Your Boat, I did like the fact that Ai was able to run into her uncle, Tai Chi, and he was able to comfort her through her fear of her male fans. It was nice to see that. Actually, it took me a little bit to realize that was her uncle. At first, I was like, oh, is that her family friend?
Right.
Like in the very beginning.
Yeah. I loved him off the bat.
Yeah. He's the example of men that I, like, needs.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
So that she can see that not all men are terrible, but we're gonna get into that a little bit later.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I also like that we are able to meet Sarissa?
When I first heard the name, I thought it was Sarissa, so I think it's Sarissa.
Sarissa. Okay. And you know what? I'm also trash because, guys, I love Basara by Yumi Tamura, and the lead, the female lead, her name is also Sarissa.
Oh.
And I just don't even know how I pronounce that in my head because I was reading it. But anyway, I love that we get to meet her and we just see that the people around her are so bright. So we like see her grandfather and everyone's congratulating him on the fact that she was able to be admitted into COCA. And we see her actually sharing the admission news with her grandmother because her grandmother had passed. So she went to her grave to like go and share it. And I thought that was such a sweet thing to see.
Yeah, that was really touching. When we go to the audition day, we learn that Tai Chi is actually a ballet teacher at COCA, and he's standing on like a balcony with the other teacher whose name I already forget.
I think it's Ando.
Ando? Okay. So they're standing up on that balcony and they're looking around kind of like saying, oh, this girl is this, and talking about like their family connections and their performance experience and stuff like that. But one thing that Tai Chi said that resonated with me was, no one who applies here is normal. And as a performer myself, I absolutely concur. Creatives aren't normal and it's the best.
Yeah, I think there's just so much more to creative people. And so like they don't even, and I say that as a creative, so like don't take it wrong, guys. Creative in the sense, I'm not as legit the way that Gianna is, like this gifted, talented, genius performer. Stop. Like, no, I'm not gonna stop. I'm going to compliment you.
I'm hiding under my shirt. Like, thank you.
I am by no means talented in that way or whatever. I do have a slight creative sense. So I feel like creatives don't even think the same way as regular people.
Yeah, sometimes I'm annoyed with myself, with my creative brain, because a normal thing could happen. Like, I could look outside and it's just like, I don't know, like this time of night in the summer right now, it's like 7:36. I could look at it. It's like, oh, yeah, it about looks that time outside. But with me, it's like the sky looks like a painting and the way the shadows are, it's just so beautiful. It, like, nothing can be normal.
Yeah. I mean, same. To be honest, like, can you smell when rain's coming?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great. Because I remember somebody, I think someone on Twitter was talking about it. It was just like, oh, I think people who say that are weird. And it's like, no, like,
there's a feeling in the air. There's a density. There's a in feeling. I don't know, the humidity. We can feel it. We can sense it.
We can sense it. I can smell when the rain is coming. And it's not in that way, like in Mean Girls, where the girl was just like, oh, like her boobs tell her when it's like the weather's gonna change.
Yeah.
But there's really like a legit smell, guys. Anyway.
Yes.
That is a big sidetrack.
Quite.
Yeah. So creatives are different. And I would say when it comes to that scene, I really like that the animation, they chose to do exposition in that way. So it's like, oh, okay, we're learning about who some of these students are and why they're important or who they're connected to through these teachers talking to one another.
Yeah, I liked that. That was a good way to do exposition.
Yeah.
I do have one more thing from the audition.
Okay.
Okay, look, there were some extremely gay vibes under that cherry blossom tree. The way I was looking at her, like, her long, lithe limbs. Like, okay, you're checking her out fully.
Right? Like, why would you be thinking about her lithe arms or legs?
Right? Right.
Like, I mean, I can check out a girl, but, you know, I wouldn't. I mean, I guess it depends on the frame of mind I'm in. But still, I wouldn't be poetic.
She was very poetic about it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty much it. The only other thing I had in Floats Your Boat was I just loved the predicament that they're roommates.
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Because Sarasa, she is just this charismatic, bright person. And I guess because maybe since she grew up in a smaller town, like with her grandfather, like she's just really more honest about what she feels rather than like hiding how she feels about things. She's just upfront with it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not as quick on social cues. So it's like, clearly you can tell that I is antisocial. She's not trying to talk to anybody. And Sarasa does not let that stop her. She's just like, oh, you can put up this little screen, but I'm gonna poke my head under it and be talking to you.
Yeah. Especially because they're roommates, she really wants to make that effort to get close to Ai. So it's really adorable.
Yeah. The last thing that I had in Floats Your Boat was about Sarasa and the way that she announced that she wanted to be Lady Oscar for a Coco review.
Mm-hmm.
So the way she announced it, it just reminded me so much of Luffy from One Piece. Because at the end of every episode and probably at least once during certain arcs, you will see Luffy say, like, he's gonna be king of the pirates. And so when you see Sarasa, like, tells everybody, like, has no qualms about it either, like, she wants to be Lady Oscar for Coco Review. I like that about her. I just like that she's ambitious and she's letting everybody know that she's that ambitious as well.
Yeah, because it seems like the politics at Coco is to almost not show your hand and not let people know what you're going for and just let your work show for itself. But she just wants to share in her passion and be open about it. And I love that.
Yeah, I love that about her. Let's move to banana split. So, do you have any banana split?
I'll be honest, my banana split probably belongs in I Scream, You Scream.
Okay.
But I could say it anyway. So, there was that bit where they were working with that military captain.
Yeah, oh.
And yeah. And I really appreciated the way I stood her ground and said, I don't appreciate being touched, Captain, when he went out and, like, touched her shoulder without asking first.
Mm-hmm.
But his reply, I hated. He's like, I can't even hug my granddaughter anymore. These days you have to be careful not to offend anybody. Mm. And then immediately sort of low-key offended Sarasa. And he's like, you're a tall broad, aren't you? Because she's 5'10". And Again, I appreciated her response. No hesitation. That's kind of offensive, sir.
Yeah.
And at least in that 0.25 seconds, he thought to ask before he shoved her. So it's almost like he kind of learned something from these girls. That's why it's banana split, because they stood up for themselves and he actually learned to ask before touching someone.
Yeah, yeah. I had what he said as hot fudge for me.
Yeah. Oh, because it's awful.
Yeah, but I'm glad that I like stood up for herself as well, and that Sarasa, she also was just like, yeah, what you just said is sexual harassment as well. Like, so
yeah,
she also caught him up too. So it's not, I feel like in that way, even though she technically wasn't doing this, I feel like she also backed up I at the same time.
Yeah, and it's like she was on that same wavelength, like, I'm not going to take his bullshit either.
Yeah, yeah. So I liked that.
Mm-hmm.
For a banana split, I had that I didn't know how to feel about I being recognized on the subway.
Yeah.
First off, since she had her headphones on her ears, if I have my headphones in, and I think just in general, like as women, I mean, it doesn't even have to just apply to women technically. I guess it could apply to anybody. If you don't want to talk to random strangers or like people, you just put your headphones in, and normally people don't talk to you because they just think that you wouldn't hear them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there have been plenty of times, especially like when I was living in the DC area and had to go on the metro a lot, where I would put headphones in and I wasn't even listening to anything. I just did it because I didn't want to talk to random people. So in seeing I being recognized, I was just like, oh, like if you just sort of held it or kind of ignored that guy, like you could have just played it off like you didn't hear him. I would have just played it off in that sense.
Yeah, so would I.
Yeah, I just think the reason I didn't know how to feel about it is just because, one, I feel like at least that guy in particular, I don't think that he meant any ill will at all. He was literally just was watching it and then noticed her. And so it's just like, oh, like, you know, I guess he just wanted to like say hi.
Yeah, it's tough because I think with her wearing a mask, having her headphones on and her body language saying like, don't come near me, I think he probably should have respected her distance and not bothered her.
Yeah, you could tell that she didn't want to talk to anybody. And I feel like, if anything, she could have played it off like she wasn't her, like she sort of tried to do with the second encounter that happened.
Yeah.
Although that didn't work either because she like took her mask off.
Mm-hmm. I was like, why are you taking it off before you get home if you're not trying to be recognized?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it's just because she was like running away and then she's in this panic state of mind. And so like, even though, like, the mask, she could still breathe through it, but I don't know, maybe she just wanted to take bigger gulps of air and didn't want to be encumbered by the mask.
Yeah.
But still, like, I totally got what you said. Like, I think maybe one or two breaths, okay, but, like, I would have put it back on. I would have had a hat on as well because I feel like her hair is just very eye-catching.
Yeah, it's very distinct.
And so it's like if she had covered her hair, I don't think people would have recognized her.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I didn't know how to feel about it because I didn't think that either of them, well, yeah, I didn't feel like either of them had ill will. And this is before we learned anything else, guys. I also put in banana split that it's clear that I went through some type of trauma.
Yeah.
Which... we'll get into that later as well.
Mm-hmm.
I guess something else that I noticed, although it's not as bad, is that for COCA to be like this famous all-girl school for a famous all-girl theater troupe, there are a lot of male faculty, or at least a lot more than I thought there would be.
That's an interesting observation. I didn't even really think about that, but you're right.
Because it's like, you see the principal, the homeroom teacher, I's uncle, the military man. So I was just like, there's a lot of men. Not that they can't teach them, but I was just kind of, I was questioning it. I was just like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, do you have any rocky road?
I don't. I actually only have one more point left, and it's one I scream, you scream for later.
I had a rocky road, although it didn't really make me cry necessarily, but I thought it was sad seeing people gossip about I while she was, like, walking through COCA.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they were waiting for the announcement thing. I was just, like, they can't whisper, or maybe just wait till she's, like, not around to be blatantly talking about her. I just thought that that was a lot.
Yeah, very bold of them to do it right in front of her.
Right. Okay, so now getting into Hot Fudge. So for Hot Fudge, I did not like the fact that the media was at Coca's admission event at the school, because I don't really know, and obviously it's not like I know the laws in Japan, but when it comes to people reporting media here, unless a guardian's permission is given, or unless like the student is like a public figure, there are laws against media taking photographs of minors. And even though like these girls, some of them come from like famous families, there are a lot that don't. And so I didn't like the fact that the media was there, because why are they taking pictures of minors and like announcing it? They could very well just announce that certain people were accepted into the school. Like, I feel like it's a breach in privacy.
Yeah, I do agree. Although I don't think that they're all minors, because in episode 2, I believe, when they meet the older students, the one girl says she's 20 and she's a second year. So I don't think it's like you have to be a certain age only to start there. I think it's like maybe a range of ages.
Right, right.
But either way, it's still an invasion of privacy.
But yeah, I still see it as an invasion of privacy, because there are still minors and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So unless it was agreed upon, I don't think that there was need for a media presence at this admission event. And then my other hot fudge was like we talked about earlier, like the military guy talking about like sexual harassment. I just thought that anecdote was just annoying as fuck.
Yeah, I hated that they included that.
And the thing about it is like, okay, so not only are you talking about the sexual harassment thing, you're also talking about your grandchild, mm-hmm. and how she doesn't allow you to like touch her or whatever. And so I don't know, why wasn't that a conversation like with your grandchild of why she doesn't want you to touch her?
Right.
Or to just get in general a better sense of boundaries, because you don't have to have female family members to observe the boundaries of women. But I would think that if you had like a grandchild that's the same age as these girls and she's expressed certain things, like why wouldn't you think first before trying to touch somebody that you don't know, or to even make a fuss about it? I feel like him making a fuss after I said that she doesn't like to be touched, I thought that was unnecessary, because he didn't need to touch her.
No.
She doesn't know you. You're doing a seminar. You don't have to. I feel like that was a bit too familiar anyway.
Yeah, and also way to announce to the room that your granddaughter probably has a reason to not want to be touched by you.
Right, right. And I mean, I'm glad that with Sarasa that she also like further educated him about it to the point where he did ask if it was okay if he could like push her and stuff. But still, it didn't give me good vibes, especially after I noticed like how much male faculty was at the school. I was just like, oh, so now we have to see this, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now Ice Cream You Scream are dislikes. Okay, so I guess mine, Ice Cream You Scream, deals with the cherry blossom tree situation. What is yours about?
Mine is eyes cancellation.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Yeah.
I got canceled. That's the word they used. Kicked out of JPX and had to resign as an idol because she called a male fan a creep. When it seemed like he was like overstepping his boundaries and maybe touching her when she didn't want to be touched. You can't just reach out and touch a famous person. That's a person with boundaries. And she called him a creep for doing it. So she got kicked out of JPX for that.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to quite fully unpack it, because that's ridiculous. And I feel like any normal society wouldn't cancel a person over this. I feel like this is a horrible example of how a person could get canceled, because it's usually not the case when it's something so justified.
Right. And this is a legitimate concern, because I feel like I watched a YouTube video about this like a couple weeks ago, and I don't remember the idol group, but there was a Japanese idol group, and this guy was obsessed with one of the girls that was part of this group. And he was angry at her because she had stopped like responding to his messages, because he was determined to like marry her. He would buy super expensive things and try to give them to her.
Ew.
He would go to all of her concert stops. He was always around, and she just didn't want to be involved with him. And so then it switched from him being like obsessed with her and like he wants to be with her type of way into like a violent thing. And so he ended up following her at one point and then stabbing her multiple times.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so then she had to like go get all of these surgeries. She had to leave the group. And he went to jail, but I feel like he's out now. He's either out or he's about to get out. Even though, like, literally, it's like attempted murder. Whatever sentence he got, it wasn't harsh enough.
Yeah.
In my opinion. And he's like either about to get out or he's already out, which is so scary.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. And so to see this, it's like, okay, having a legitimate stalker situation with idol groups, like, that's real. But I feel like even if they're doing meet and greet, there should be security.
Yes.
Why does an idol have to touch a fan? And clearly from what we saw in the episode, he wasn't letting go of her hand, which is why she called him a creep.
Ugh.
I don't like that either. I don't like the fact that they punished her for standing up for herself.
Yeah.
I think that that's like crazy. Once you started talking about it, it was just, it reminded me of that. Episode 3 especially reminded me of that. But like I said, we're going to get into it. So one of the ice cream you screams that I had was about the cherry blossom tree. So them talking about this tree and the superstition that this tree had, we see Taichi and Ando Sensei talking about it during the admission event where they see all of these students. And so they're all watching Ai and Sarasa like take pictures under the cherry blossom tree. And so I'm just like, okay, well, if you have this sort of superstition about this tree, why don't you take the shit down?
Right.
Replant it.
Just let people be cursed.
Right. Like, y'all just go ahead and be cursed. Or why don't you like have a little sign that's there that says something?
Wait, I love that. Just like a little wooden sign. And it's like, this tree's cursed. Don't stand under it.
Right, like, you know, like the beware dog sign, like beware of this tree.
It's the most least threatening thing in the entire universe. Beware the cherry blossom tree.
Right, just beware of it. Like, you're not going to get what you want.
Oh.
But honestly, if you can't take it down, put a sign up. And all of those people just standing back and watching, I just never liked that type of response from people. From what we've seen in the shows we've been reviewing, is just people watching things happen and not saying anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That gets on my nerves. But still, just take the shit down or put a sign up. Like, I just don't get why they would allow something like that to happen. And then y'all are just thinking all of this extra stuff to yourself. And meanwhile, people are just having a good time because it's a pretty tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. The last ice cream you scream that I had is about Ai. So I just didn't like how she was talking down about Sarasa to Taichi. And I felt that she was being overdramatic about the room thing. Like, oh, change my room.
Yeah.
The thing about it is that Taichi even explained her background to her to just be like, yeah, you know, like she comes from like a more country area. It's just her and her grandpa. And she's just this bright person. And so I feel like when you're roommates with somebody, like at that point, you just have to tell them like, this is where I'm coming from, or this is the type of person that I am. Like, you just kind of go over general things, like stuff about yourself so that people can understand. Like, I feel if she just articulated who she was or like what she likes or dislikes to Sarasa, then Sarasa would take note of that sort of thing. If you told her, like, you can't just expect her to pick up on whatever bad juju or bad vibes or whatever social cues that you're putting out when she just wants to be friends.
Yeah, it might take her a while to adjust because she seems like she's very in her own ways sometimes, Sarasa, like the way she oversleeps and always has to be woken up and stuff. But I'd like to think if Ai was honest with her, maybe they would be able to work out something instead of just immediately trying to put up a curtain between them.
Yeah, I think just having an honest conversation, it would have been fine, but she's just very dramatic.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was episode one, guys. Let's get into episode two, Those Who Long to Cross the Silver Bridge. So here is our soft serve summary. The first year students meet the second year students and get assigned their advisors for the year. Ai gets potential mean girl Hijiri as her advisor, while Sarasa gets Risa as her advisor. We learn that Sarasa might be too tall to play Lady Oscar as she wants because Lady Oscar cannot be taller than the character Andre. But Risa tells Sarasa that the reason she can't be Oscar is due to the cherry blossom tree curse. So Sarasa lets her know that nothing will stop her from achieving including her dreams, including superstitions. And then later we see Ando Sensei, the homeroom teacher for the first year class. We see him having the class introduce themselves to one another, and then they go off to visit the Koka Theater backstage. So they are able to look at costumes, they meet some of the workers there, and during this time, Sarasa walks off to the actual Koka like stage, the legitimate stage, you guys. From there, a spotlight is shined on her, and Ai admires Sarasa's stage presence. We then learn that the sliver of stage that's in the front is called the silver stage, where only the absolute top actresses get to step on. So, themes. Gianna, do you have a theme?
I do. It might be a reach, but I have. Though people may struggle to understand your uniqueness, do not try to stifle it, because it's what will lead you to where you're supposed to be.
Just magnifique. Chef kiss. Yes.
It's chef kiss. Mwah.
Yes, perfect.
Thanks.
I just said superstitions don't stop dreams.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. As for sprinkle on top, I just put that the stage creates moments of transformation.
Oh, I like that. I don't have any sprinkles on top. I'm sure there's something to be seen in, like, whatever the silver bridge is, but...
Yeah.
I couldn't really quite string it together, so...
No, it's fine. I mean, even what I said, I feel like it could have doubled as a theme, to be honest. But the stage, I feel, or at least from what we see, like, as soon as Sarasa stepped onto that stage, she low-key had this magical girl transformation from being in her uniform to then suddenly like being in a play with her makeup on and her wig. So that's why I said that, but we only get to it at the end of the episode. It's not like it was a prevalent thing throughout it.
Yeah. Like all of my floats your boat points are just quick reactionary things. So I don't even have a whole lot to say about this episode. I was just kind of kicking back and watching it.
Yeah, I wrote a little bit. For floats your boat, I said that the uniform, so the Koka uniform reminds me of Usagi's uniform from Sailor Moon.
It is kind of like that, yeah. I was thinking that too, specifically during the opening when the colors are really popping.
Yeah, it reminded me of it, except they have a belt.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the belt is cute, but I was just like, oh, okay. We're seeing so many references to different anime that happened before Kageki Shoujo. So it's like, I don't know if they're doing that on purpose or maybe the mangaka is doing that on purpose, but I appreciate seeing all of those little touches.
Yeah, also on those little touches, something I extra noticed, and I noticed it in the first episode too, but I really, really like the artistic choice to have everybody's eyelashes match their hair color. I really love that.
Yeah, I like that as well. I think it's just nice. Overall, I would just say seeing so much color within this, I think it's something that Gianna and I both really like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Sugimoto is the first year class representative, and I appreciated the fact that she went and woke Sarasa up so that they wouldn't be late for their meeting with the second year students.
Yeah.
Because I was not trying at all.
No, I thought that was so funny though.
She's just like, wake up. Like, yeah. Nobody's gonna wake up to that.
Yeah, she did such a bad job.
She threw that crumpled piece of paper at her. I'm like, okay, well, if you're gonna do that, at least hit her face.
Right.
If you have to do it that way. But yeah, so that didn't work out. But I'm glad that Sugimoto went to go wake her up.
Yeah, me too.
And it made sense that she was part of student council, which, oh my gosh, do we see student council people in everything that we review?
Yeah.
Like, damn. But anyway, I like the idea of the first year students having like a second year advisor.
Yeah, that's cute.
It just goes a long way in making them feel more comfortable.
I also loved in particular when they were meeting the second year students and the second year said their piece and how they're going to be their advisors or big sisters or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the first years bow to say thank you in sync exactly the way Sugimoto said. But Sarasa instead is like, that's so awesome. Thank you. Just out of sync with everybody. And I loved that. Just, she's just so fun.
Yeah, I feel like she stands out, like, no matter what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just really endearing.
It is.
I also like the fact, and I had to look this up, guys, because you know that when they talk about height, they do it in centimeters. And, like, I don't know that. So, Sarasa is actually 5'8".
Oh, can I make a confession?
Oh, Okay.
I was watching this in English because it was just easier to take notes that way. And in the English dub, they say she's 5'10".
Oh, okay. So I took the centimeters. Okay. I took the centimeters from the sub guys. And so it was like 174. But okay.
She says she's about 5'10". So somewhere in there.
That works. Yeah. Well, either way, she's tall as hell. Damn. Okay. That is 3 of me.
Yes, I'm 5'2 and a half, so that is very taller than me.
Oh, okay. Well, you're taller than me. I'm 5'1".
We're tiny little Sunday shop owners.
Right, we're gonna be looking up at Sarasa together.
Yeah, we'll have to make, you know, our storefront and our counter will have to be so it's not too tall for us to work.
Yeah, but yeah, so I thought that was interesting. It's like, oh, okay, she is very tall, definitely taller than most people.
Yeah.
And the next thing that I had, it's actually a jump to Sarasa's conversation with her advisor, Risa.
Okay.
So I don't know. Do you have any floats your boat?
I think mine might be before that, when they're introducing themselves in class. It's very quick. I just loved Sarasa's personal introduction because she just veers off on a personal tangent and overshares, like, the way her cat's nose twitches and what her grandfather does for a job. And I just loved that so much. Just the way everyone was like, I'm formally trained in ballet, and I gave it up so I could come here to Coca. And she's like, my cat's nose twitches and it's really cute.
Yeah, and she's just so open. And I feel like even if these people are like so confident and talking about their reason for going to Coca, I think that I wish there were more students that were like Sarasa.
Yeah.
Like, I know she's supposed to stand out, but like there should be more girls that are like, I want to make friends and this is going to be like my new life and you should know more about me. Like, she's such an open book.
Mm-hmm.
I wish there were just more people that appreciated that about her.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So Sarasa and Risa, they meet up and she is telling Sarasa that she has to like clean up this room and use like this tiny brush to clean the window sill and like to get the grout out of like the floor and all of that, which I mean, that is a separate segment about how I felt about it. And then also part of like Risa's argument or what the stuff she was saying to Sarasa is definitely in another segment. But what I liked about that scene was the fact that Sarasa like stood up for herself, because she said in the first episode that she wanted to play Lady Oscar, which meant that she wanted to be a top star because only top stars are able to play like lead roles in that way. And Risa, at first you think it's like some sort of mean girl tactic that she's like, oh, you can't be Lady Oscar, and it pissed me off. But then she like talks about the logistics of it, because Sarasa is so tall that it would mean that the person who plays Andre, which is like another character within Rose of Versailles, would have to be just as tall as her, if not taller. And she's the tallest person. So like technically for now, it can't happen. Not that it couldn't happen in the future, guys. Just at that moment, it couldn't happen, I guess. But instead of telling her that, Risa tells her that it's because she took pictures under the cherry blossom tree. And so Sarasa's just like, that superstition is like rubbish. I'll prove that it means nothing. And she directly said that there's no such thing as absolutes when it comes to can it or can't. And so I love that she stood up for herself in that way. And then because of the way she stood up for herself, Risa respected Sarasa in that moment. And also, like, I guess used part of what Sarasa said to encourage herself about wanting to play the girl roles in Japanese play, Musume Yaku.
Yeah, that was an interesting scene. Because, like you said, it started off going in a really negative direction. But her motivation behind the words really clarified a lot.
Yeah.
Although, of course, she felt like she couldn't share that with Sarasa, and I understand why, but I just appreciated Sarasa's response so much.
Yeah.
Like, she wasn't gonna let anything stop her. I loved that.
Yeah. And it's like, I would say the one good thing I could say about Risa is the fact that she didn't say anything about the height thing.
She can't help that.
She can't change that about herself. Rather than using that to like break her spirit, she just actually took encouragement from what Sarasa said and decided to start helping her and cleaning the room.
Yeah, I'm also like right now thinking like there's not like a girl who's 5'6" that you can put in a 6-inch heel.
Right.
So that she can play Lady Oscar. Like, come on.
Come on. Okay. Because they wore those little heels. Men wore them too back then.
Yeah.
So it's not impossible. They just want to say that it is, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I sort of noticed this in Sprinkle on Top, but I love that Sarasa got this little magical girl transformation when she got on the Coca stage, once they went directly to the theater to like go look backstage and stuff. And you just saw like her eyes lit up. You saw her like flash back into her memories of being part of like a kabuki play.
Yeah.
And I think just seeing that, it was just really sweet to see that hint of like, I don't know. I just love the references to other anime that we're sort of seeing within this one.
Yeah, and just seeing her light up with passion and excitement for being one step closer to her dreams being realized was really, really nice.
Yeah, and then they put the spotlight on her.
Yeah.
Although they didn't know that it was her, but they put the spotlight on her, and I was just like, yes, do that.
Yes, and also, hear me out. I, being like, Sarasa's stage presence was dazzling. It gay. Little gay. It was a little gay for me.
I mean, I feel like, I don't know, because it's like, yes, but like, I is mean right now.
But no, the thing of it is, it's like she doesn't realize it's gay yet.
She doesn't realize that it's gay, but it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, before you realize, you know, like, I don't know. That makes sense to me, because, like, you'll have thoughts, and then, like, 3 years later, it's like, oh, no, that was a gay thought. So I'm wondering if that's what's happening to her right now.
Like, she can't help but look at her and stuff. But, yeah, like, just how poetic.
Yeah.
She is always so poetic about Sarasa when she starts complimenting her in her head and she's not talking shit.
Yeah, talking about the stars in her eyes. Come on.
Right.
That's all my floats your boat.
That was all my floats your boat, too. Do you have any banana split?
No, I actually just have a couple ice cream you scream points.
Banana split, although I guess this could technically be ice cream you scream, I didn't like how people were just harping on I about being an idol.
Yeah.
Okay, we get it, you know.
Right, the way the one girl, I'm gonna eventually get everybody's names. When I first start watching a show, it takes me a hot minute to remember everybody's name. But the one girl in her class, after I made her introduction, and she's like, that is so not all, after I was like, that's all, and she tried to sit down. Like, she obviously doesn't want to talk about her time in JPX. Like, it's obviously painful for her. Why put her through it?
Right, and I feel like if she wanted to say it, she would have said it. But for her to be like, that's not all, it's like, okay, great. The petty in me would have been like, I'm glad you Googled me.
Right.
Like,
it's nice to know that I occupy that space in your mind.
Right, because if she wanted to say that, she would have said that. And then she just got up and then she talked about it. But when she did talk about JPX, she said that she was kicked out.
Yeah. And that's painful.
Right. Which is painful. And I'm just like, yeah, that's why she didn't want to say it. And then she talked about like her mom being an actress, which I feel like, just in the way that she didn't want to talk about JPX, she probably didn't want to talk about her mom either.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that in the next episode.
We sure will.
Yeah. I think, banana split for Sugimoto. Sugimoto's the girl that woke Sarasa up and is the first class, like, representative. I mean, I applaud her for being the highest scoring person in their class, but I am also just like, why would you force somebody, like, so because of the fact she's the highest scoring person, she has to be the representative. Like, what if she didn't want to be it?
Yeah, that's rough.
I didn't like that, because it's like, not that she doesn't deserve, like, some sort of reward, but you didn't have to give her added responsibility.
Yeah.
As, like, a reward. Because that's not what it is.
Right. Obviously, she's a hard worker. So you're going to give her more work to do on top of the work she's already doing very hard.
Right, right. So moving into Hot Fudge, I had like one slight thing. And I basically just said, so they're typecasting people out of the gate before they even had a chance to act. And I wrote that in reference to Risa having her flashback to when Hajiri was talking to her. Hajiri is Ai's advisor. She's also another second year. So her and Risa are in the same class. And so you see this flashback of when they were first years, and Risa was talking about how she wanted to be a Musume Yaku, which is basically the actress that plays the girl roles because that's what she really likes. And just based off of her looks and I guess the sound of her voice, Hajiri was telling her that, oh, she would be better suited to play like villain roles.
Yeah.
Which is why I was just like, so you're gonna just typecast her? And the thing is, because they're just in the school, they haven't even gotten to the stage yet. And so I was just like, why would you, I don't know, like just the mean girl aspect of it. For me, I just saw it as like being unnecessary. And I feel like even in the way she said it, she could have done it in a different way to just be like, oh, well, that's great that you have like this goal. Like, I would have thought she wanted to be this type of role, like, or whatever. But if you want to do that, then that's fine. And I guess maybe based off of that flashback, that's the reason why she didn't completely like stamp on Sarasa's dreams of being Lady Oscar.
Yeah.
She knew how it felt. But then at the same time, I just didn't like the way that Risa was. So now we're going to get into Ice Cream, You Scream. Anyway, Gianna, do you have Ice Cream, You Scream?
Yeah. I mean, just to add to your last point too, the competition between these girls is ruthless.
Yeah.
Just on that flashback alone, I think is why I made that note. Just based off of the type of voice you have and how you look, it's just, you can feel the tension between every interaction with these girls. Every word they say and every move they make holds such high stakes, and that is a very stressful way to live.
I think that it's just so off-putting. I get that they're in like this dog-eat-dog situation because of the fact that only a certain amount of people are allowed into these troops. And I guess it also doesn't matter how old you are either, which is something that we learned since like Risa is like 20 to Sarasa's being like 15.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's sad because like, why can't they be like friends? And something that I thought about, especially when we were seeing them go to the Koka Theater and go backstage and see the people working on stuff. So like Ando Sensei said that when people go to school, they can either go and get married or they can do other jobs or they can do this or that. And then if you're going to the Koka school, you either sink or swim. And I'm just like, okay, well, if all of these people are going to the Koka school, then like, why don't they become seamstresses? Like, we see the costume designers like backstage. Why can't they do that? I feel like there are other ways rather than just saying, well, if you don't get in, like, you suck. I feel like there's more that they could do. So him saying it in that way, I feel like it just further amplifies the antagonism that's going to happen between like the girls.
Yeah, absolutely. I just had one other Ice Cream, You Scream.
Okay.
So they have to do cleaning duties before class on top of rigorous performance classes.
Oh my gosh.
That's insane to me. Dare I say it? Shouldn't there be a custodian? Are we gonna need to make Koka custodian shirts too?
Right, okay. Listen, same wavelength, almost same brain, Gianna. Cause I wrote, it's a scam. Why don't they have janitors?
Right? Like, oh my god.
So y'all have all these people are coming out here and you're saying, oh, you gotta clean the grout, you gotta do, if y'all are such a successful theater, successful troupe, you got media people coming in and around, why don't y'all have custodians?
Yeah, you can for sure afford one.
Right, come on, like these chores, like y'all just be cutting too many costs, just hire people, damn.
Yeah.
That could even be more people that were rejected. I mean, not that they would want to clean the school, but shit. Like, you know, if they graduate and they don't get part of the troop, like, at least they'll have some type of job. But making the students do that, I thought that was bullshit, too.
Yeah.
And then I feel like I've sort of touched on mostly everything. I guess going back to that conversation between, like, Risa and Sarasa and just the overall, like, vibe that I got from, like, the second years, I don't see the point of them hazing first years.
Right. I don't see that in real life either. That is a stupid thing.
Like, they already worked so hard. Like, out of 200 applicants, you only get 40 students to be here, and then you want to make their life that much harder. Well, I mean, not in this instance, because it's not as if Risa was just like, okay, like, you're a slave now or whatever, because she eventually came around. But given what she said about how some second year advisors like make the first year's life like a living hell for a year, it just reminded me of hazing. And so with everything that they've had to give up to be part of this school, I don't think that that's necessary. I don't think that they need to be bullied. I don't think that they have to deal with their complexes. So whether it's an inferiority complex or a superiority I don't think that that's necessary. They're just here to learn.
Yeah, there's no need. It's so stressful on its own. There doesn't need to be any added stress.
Yeah. Okay. All right, guys. So we're going to get into Kakeki Shoujo Episode 3, The Teddy Bear. We are issuing a trigger warning. This episode and this recap, we are going to be talking about the fetishization of young girls, sexual harassment of young girls, parent and or guardian not believing a victim's story, and persistent stalking. If this is something that you are unwilling to hear or you don't want to get into it, please come back to us next week. Do what is best for your mental health. We're going to make sure to actually put the contact information for Rain in our show notes for anyone who needs it. So that is our trigger warning. Let us get into a soft serve summary, which, guys, this is coming from Wikipedia because so much happened with this. I didn't know how I could spin this into something with other words. So this episode reveals Ai's past and the lies she had to put up with, including the teddy bear her mother, an actress, says is from her father, but he's not in the picture. The episode also gets to the root of Ai's hatred for men, namely sexual harassment from her mother's boyfriend at a young age, which scarred her during her junior high years. Her joining JPX 48 is supposed to have been a means to escape men, but is proven otherwise. Meanwhile, her stalker arrives at Koka School because he found out where she was and he's getting closer to her location. So that is our summary. Gianna, do you have a theme?
I do. When someone is telling you that something is wrong, listen to them and believe victims.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I just said a very ambiguous, there is a reason for everything.
Yeah.
I said that in reference to just Ai's character. Because I figured that she had some type of trauma. Like, from the first episode, I was just like, she went through something and now we realize what it was. Do you have any sprinkle on top?
I do. I don't know if it's right, but I'm wondering if the teddy bear symbolized her innocence, because immediately after she's violated by her mom's boyfriend, she stabs the teddy bear and rips out the stuffing, and then it's no longer the same, just like her.
Right, right. Same wavelength again. I had a teddy that lost its stuffing is equivalent to a child losing their innocence.
Yeah.
So, floats your boat. There's not going to be many for this episode, you guys.
No.
We're just kind of pissed. But in general, I would say, or at least the way the episode starts off, you see all of the first year students eating with each other in like their locker room. And the other students are complaining about the food. And Sarasa is so optimistic. In that moment, she's just said like, oh, it's nice that they got food specially made for them.
Yeah.
And so I like that her personality, like she's always trying to see the brighter side of things.
Yeah, I really appreciated that. I was actually in my banana split just because of what the girls were saying before Sarasa chimed in.
Yeah.
When they're criticizing their lunches, they're like, oh, it could look cuter. Like, I wish I had someone making me a cute little lunch every day.
They had bunnies in it.
Yeah. Like, you should just be appreciative that someone made you something good to eat.
Yeah, you get to eat. At least you aren't making the food.
Miss Privilege.
Y'all already gotta clean the room, so at least you aren't making the food. I would be happy about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the next thing that I had, and it's very few, so I'll also ask you. I said that seeing Ai's family background helped me understand her better, because I really just didn't like her.
That's probably the most positive way you could spin that, truly. You did so, I'm proud of you. That's way better than I could have done.
Thank you, because I really, I mean, to be honest, guys, I really didn't like Ai. in these first couple episodes that we saw.
She's definitely not perfect.
She's not perfect. And so seeing her backstory, it helps me understand why she is the way that she is.
Yeah. And going off of the backstory, so much love for Uncle Tai Chi. He's the best. He immediately believes Ai about what she was going through at home with her mom's boyfriend. And he gives her a key to his place so she knew she had somewhere to go if she ever needed to run.
I feel like it's like yes or no for me, y'all. I'm sorry. With Tai Chi.
Oh, yeah? Really? I thought he was so protective. I guess maybe I missed something?
No. It's like, I feel like he could have done more.
Oh, well, yeah, he probably could have done more. But I understand, like, maybe it was muddy with the mom now being home. And maybe she was like, she's my kid kind of thing. So it might not have been, like, that easy for him.
Right. I did put that I like the fact that he added a lock to her door.
Yes, absolutely.
That was definitely floats your boat for me. I'm glad that he did that for her.
I do have a couple very light points from earlier in the episode for floats your boat.
Okay. I think my last 2 points in Floats Your Boat is actually towards the end of the episode with Sarasa. So, okay.
Okay. So, I really like that Sarasa says that she worries about Ai eating, making sure that she's eating enough. I thought that was really cute. Just that friendly concern for her.
Yeah.
And also, guys, follow me, okay? Ai is venting to her uncle Tai Chi about how awful it is being Sarasa's roommate, describing all of these very specific things about Sarasa's routine, and Tai Chi just kind of smirks at her. He's like, since when do you notice little details? And it kind of seems like you can't take your mind off of her. And I may say again,
the gay.
Gay.
Shoujo Sungay, guys.
Shoujo Sungay is back and it is better than ever.
Yeah.
That's it for me, though.
You know what? Honestly, if she becomes nicer, I might ship them.
Right. No, for sure, she would have to make a lot of character growth.
Yeah. Yeah. But I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Little gay. Little gay.
The gay is there.
Yeah.
Yeah. My last points in Floats Your Boat is about Sarasa. So one, I love that Sarasa tried to stand up for Yamada in their tap class.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, guys, the fact that we have to deal with sexual harassment and fat phobia in one episode, but... Anyway, so the tap dance teacher was started getting at Yamada because she's like, oh, you've gained weight. And I'm just like, that girl looks like everybody else. What?
Right. She looked perfectly fine.
And she is just like, you know, like, you have to lose weight. So Sarasa is trying to, like, make it better. She's like, oh, well, you know, like, added curves, like, that's good, you know? It looks good on girls our age or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And then the teacher's just like, this is for the female gaze, not the male gaze. And then I was just like, oh, okay. Noting that, because yes, there are, and this is a thing, like, I don't dress up, when I do dress up, I don't dress up for men. I dress up for myself. And then at the same time, I guess technically for women, and that if I know that a man isn't gonna notice, like, shit about what I'm wearing, but a woman would be like, oh, like, look at how she matched her shoes, like, with her jacket, or, like, the different touches that I would add onto an outfit. So when the teacher said that the troupe, like the Coca Theater troupe, it's not for the male gaze, it's for the female gaze. I was like, okay, that's a slight point. But I still didn't like the fat phobia though.
What she followed it up with though wasn't good.
It wasn't. It was terrible.
Yeah, she was like, women are going to want to be you. So you want to look like the ideal woman.
You want to look like a fantasy.
She's talking about people being underweight and uncomfortable. And that's just terrible.
Especially, I feel like Yamada is also a minor too, the way that I see it. So anyway, that teacher was ass, but
yes.
The only floats your boat that I had for that was just the fact that Sarasa stood up for her. And then once they went back to the locker room and Yamada was just crying, and then the rest of the class was being little assholes too. Like, oh, you gotta look out for yourself. You gotta do da 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 da.
Yeah.
Y'all don't need to come at her like that. Maybe if you had to say something, you could say it different, or just say it the way that Sarasa said. She was just like, oh, we can talk to, like, the dorm mother about what we can do.
Yeah. She offered a solution.
Yeah. Like, I feel like there's just ways to go about certain things and, like, comforting people. And then I would also say the fact that Sarissa acted as Ai's bodyguard at the end of the episode, that was in my flipster boat because of the fact, like, Ai deadass was like, we're not friends earlier in the episode. And so Sarissa was hurt by that. And her uncle even was said, like, oh, I hope you can try to be friends with her. And then Sarissa was just like, well, I was hurt by what Ai said. And then hearing about her stalker and stuff, she was just like, okay, well, we don't have to be friends. I can still, like, walk you back to our dorm. Like, that was so nice.
I love her.
She's such a great all-around, like, character.
She really is.
Even when Ai hurt her feelings, she was just like, well, I'm not going to, like, let you be scared by yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, she even went as far as, like, holding her hand once the stalker, like, showed up again to be like, oh, I'll stand in front of you. And
yeah,
so yeah, so that was the last of Floats Your Boat. Do you have any banana split?
No, I already covered it.
Okay, so Rocky Road, do you have any?
I probably should have put stuff in Rocky Road, but I was just so angry by everything that it all just ended up in some weird hot fudge ice cream you scream amalgamation or whatever the word is for that. Amalgamate? Oh god, yeah. I don't know big words right now.
No, it's okay. It's all a combination, all mixed together. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey guys, really quick, it's Editing Gianna here. I wanted to just confirm that the word is amalgamation, which means the action, process, or result of combining or uniting. So I did get it right. I was correct. Anyway, back to the show.
So the two things that I wrote down for Rocky Road is just, one, I wasn't ready for her backstory.
No, me neither. It came right out of left field.
I went in blind as fuck. Uh-huh. I was just like, wait, what? Like, I feel like that was just me. Like, wait, what? Are you serious? So I wasn't ready for it. And then the second thing that I had was just hearing all of Ai's rationalizations of, like, her mom and her mom bringing, like, Shaeji, who's her mom's boyfriend, into the house is so heartbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
The way she was trying to cope, like, her mom wouldn't do this, or adults are smarter, like, they would make sure things are okay.
Yeah. My mom picked him out, so he has to be a good guy.
Right. Oh. Just broke my heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hot fudge, let's go.
I'm sure that you have more fleshed out on this than I do, but when Ai calls her mother and tries to, in a panic, explain to her what just happened to her, because her stepfather, but, you know, her mom's boyfriend kissed her on the mouth, in the mouth, by force.
Yeah.
She tried to explain that to her mother, and her mother kept interrupting her, telling her she was talking nonsense and telling her to stop being a baby and she'll be home when she gets home, and just not giving her any credit. And I don't even know what more to say except believe victims and listen to people when they come to you with problems. Oh my god.
I feel like this is just me talking about my own personal life. I was in a situation where I was abused, not sexually, but I was abused, and I went to one of my former friends about it. Anytime it happened, I would tell her about it. And then once I broke up with that person and I was talking about the fact that I was, like, abused, then she turned around and was just like, what are you talking about?
No. Oh my god, I'm so sorry.
Right. Multiple times of me calling, me, like, crying, sobbing, telling her what's going on, and then to just outward, like, just deny it. I cannot tell you what it feels like to have somebody who is supposed to be, like, your closest person, and this was my best friend, so I cannot tell you what it feels like, or really just articulate what it feels like to have somebody who is that close to you who doesn't believe you in spite of you telling them, or in spite of seeing signs of it. It is soul-wrenching. It is the worst thing to ever, like, feel in this situation, because I was a child. The fact that her own mother refused to believe her.
Ugh, the gaslighting.
What an unfit mother.
Truly.
If your child is coming to you about something, when it comes specifically about sexual assault, if your child is talking to you and describing something like that to you, and it's like, not all of the flags are up, you're calling the cops, you're calling your brother to go get your child, you're not raising hell. Like, she is a terrible, she should never have been a mother.
Yeah.
I think that that is the worst thing you could ever put your child through. And meanwhile, she had I acting out an entire lie for years about, oh, this is the bear that my dad got me. And this is how she acts in front of certain people so her mom doesn't look bad. So your child is literally putting on an act, putting on a show for your benefit. And she's coming to you about something as important as this. And you decide to not believe her. And the thing about it for me is that it was already enough to like see her like, to see I call herself a dirty slut because this man assaulted her.
Mm-hmm.
He forcefully kissed her. But in my mind, I was just like, it's only a matter of time. Like, I'm surprised that it didn't go beyond that, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I thought it was going to, and I'm really glad that it didn't, but it's still really bad.
It's really bad because I'm just like, where could she even go? Because she didn't have a lock on her door.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm glad that it didn't go farther. I'm just also surprised because if he's full out like shoving a tongue in a child's mouth, I'm surprised he didn't rape her that night. Because those types of things, like sometimes it's like it's a slow escalation, right? And we sort of see that through this episode of when she was like trying to get one of her barrettes from under the entertainment center. And he's all like, oh, I can see your panty. Meanwhile, he couldn't. I mean, maybe he did because he like forcefully, the way that he like moved so that he could see them or whatever. But it's like you start off with that and then him just being fucking weird. And then the kiss, once it starts getting to that point, or at least once it gets to a physical thing, it always goes farther. So I'm glad it didn't.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't prepared for that. I was barely prepared for this.
While we're on the subject of the mom, honestly, any points that I have about the mom probably belong in Hot Fudge and not Ice Cream You Scream, just because I'm so angry about everything.
Yeah.
Just the sheer fact that the mom gets this boyfriend, never introduces him to her daughter, never like
right.
builds a bond with them, and suddenly he's moving in. What?
First day she met this guy, you're having him move into your house?
Yeah. And then I don't know how much time is between then and when she goes away, but she just leaves her with him and not a family member for a week. That is so disgustingly irresponsible.
Gross.
And like you said, says, I don't care about my kid so much that you don't want to find someone more suited to take care of them and look after them for a week.
Right. What gets me is that she called her mom to tell her what happened. And it's like, at that moment, you should call the cops.
Yes.
You should call somebody to like come and help you. And her mom didn't sound the alarm. And she's a child. So it's like, she doesn't know any better.
Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't make that right.
No.
You can't make that right. And so that just made me so upset. And then that outside of that, this one is like slightly more lighthearted, but still like, what the fuck was like her being in that elementary school and those boys in I's class talking to her about her mom's tits.
Yeah.
I'm just like, what type of boy talks about boobs? Not boy. I mean, obviously, yes, boys do that. But like elementary school?
Little boys. Yeah.
What? Who raised y'all? Who raised all of y'all? Like, all of these parents are out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess we could sort of get into, and we touched on, or at least I think I said the fat phobia thing. I thought that was fucking bullshit. You can't say that to a child. I thought that was like, oh, you should lose some weight or whatever. Like, you know what? Maybe she's comfort eating. Maybe that's what it is. She's in a new place.
Yeah, it's so stressful at this school.
She doesn't have friends yet, or she's trying to make friends, and she wants to eat. There's nothing wrong with fucking eating.
No.
So to just tell her that she needs to lose weight, so what? Do you want her to become bulimic? Do you want her to become anorexic? Because to say something like that and to say it so harshly and in front of the entire class, that could just lead to like more drastic measures than what needs to happen.
Yeah.
So I'm like I said before, I'm glad that Saraso is like there to say like, oh, we can talk to the dorm mother together
mm-hmm.
to like find out what to do. But yeah, so that was also my hot fudge. But mainly the Hot Fudge Ice Cream You Scream is really just all about Ai's backstory.
Hey Shoujo fans, it is editing Gianna here again, just to insert an additional trigger warning for the next few minutes. So if you are uncomfortable with the discussion of gun violence, you can skip ahead to about 1 hour 15 minutes into the episode where we head into Ice Cream You Scream. But yeah, back to the show. Can I slip something in before we probably get back into the backstory?
Sure.
It's definitely hot fudge.
Yeah.
This is a lot, and I was dumbfounded that this was in the episode, and I hope it never comes up again. I absolutely, 1,000% understand Ai fearing or disliking men in general after what she went through, but she daydreams about gunning them down. And that's horrifying and not okay. And I truly hope that is never revisited.
And you know what? The thing about it is that in Japan, right, people can't just have guns.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't allowed. You literally have to be a cop. And then if you aren't a cop, you have to go through like so many different tests and like permissions and stuff just to have a gun, which I guess I'm not going to get into too many tangents, guys. I'm sorry. But real life example is the former prime minister of Japan was like assassinated like 2 weeks ago because somebody made a homemade gun and just killed him. But it's like he had to make it. It's not the way it is in the US because here people get gunned down in schools and all it's terrible. I mean, politics, it's terrible. I don't ascribe to, not just me, Gian, like Shoujo Sunday doesn't ascribe to gun violence in any way, shape, or form.
Yes.
And I understood where I was coming from, but like you said, she needs therapy. Like,
oh my God. Yes.
That's something else that I put in Ice Cream, You Scream, is the fact that she needs therapy. And so that's like another failure on her family's part of like, why didn't you put her in therapy? I mean, I guess we can't even say shit because her mom still lives with that fucking boyfriend that assaulted her child.
Yep.
There are so many things that is just wrong with it, but I feel like what you said is right. She doesn't need to imagine killing men with like a machine gun.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that she went through something very traumatic. And I feel like her uncle should be enough of a testament to say that not all men are like that, you know?
Right. Even in the daydream, she's like, but not Tai Chi. So like, there's an example that there are good men out there, and maybe this fantasy shouldn't be happening at all.
It shouldn't be.
I really hope there's some character growth for that, because that's so scary.
It's scary, it's dark, and with everything going on in the world, it's definitely not something I was expecting to see.
Me neither. I thought we were tuning into a funny shoujo about theater.
Right. And then it's like deep shit. Like,
yeah.
Anyway, so getting into Ice Cream, You Scream, I guess, honestly, this is just hot fudge Ice Cream, You Scream.
It really is just an amalgamation. I swear, I'm going to find what the word is, I swear.
It is amalgamation, but still.
I think it is, yeah, yeah.
Getting into that. So, first off, I wanted to know, like, does Japan not have emancipation, like, the way that they have it in the U.S.?
No idea.
Because, like, emancipation is when a minor decides to separate themselves from their parents or a guardian for whatever given reason so that they can live on their own and like take care of themselves. And I feel like in Ai's case, that was definitely needed. And you know what? I feel like that's just goes to show like just how selfish her mom is, because really, even Tai Chi, which we'll get into that because this is why even Tai Chi could have said she should call the police, you know, because if he did that to Ai, he can do that to other children. So he's literally a sex offender.
Yeah.
And you're not calling him because he's your boyfriend? What does he even do for you? Because her mom is an actress, right? So does he have a lot of money? But he's living with you. You're not living in his place. What does he do for you that you don't believe your child? And then now it's like y'all aren't even going to have him registered a sex offender because that's what he is. And y'all, I have so many feelings about this, like so much like rage, but I wish she could have gotten emancipated. I feel like I need therapy. And then to get into Tai Chi, because I had issues with him as well. And the reason why I had issues with him is because he sees Ai and she is hurt. She is traumatized. She had cut her hair. She ripped the stuffing out of her teddy bear. She wrapped her stomach with like bandages because since she's a child, she thought that since the boyfriend had tongue kissed her, that she was like pregnant. She's hiding under this blanket. She sees that it's her uncle and she tells him what happened. And so then Tai Chi and the mom get into this big fight. And for me, it's like, yes, realize I is not his child. But as the rational adult in this situation, he put a lock on her door, and I appreciated him putting a lock on her door. I felt like he could have done more. I think that he could have fought to get custody of I, since the mom was going to let that sex offender still stay in the house. That's my issue with Taichi, is the fact that you just put a lock on that door, like that man can't break the fucking door. You put a lock on the door, you gave her a key to your place. Yes, that was necessary. But it's just like, at that point, if you saw that your sister wasn't going to let go of her sex offender boyfriend, at that point, you need to go to court to get custody of that child, because he is also a party to child endangerment for not getting her out of that situation. He also didn't call the police either.
Yeah, I do wish that he would have at least tried to get her out of the situation instead of sort of slapping a band-aid on it.
Right. I mean, the way that it was, if I was I would have told her mom. Since the mom didn't call the police, she grew up at least enough to know that what that man did was harassment. I would have just threatened the mom to be like, I'll call the police, I'll blow this up, and you're an actress, so you don't want to have negative press that you have a sex offender boyfriend that assaulted me and you did nothing about it, just to even force her mom to give custody to Taichi.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't blame her in that situation because she's a minor and everything. Like, that's a lot to...
Yeah, she's very young.
That's a lot to think about. That's why I have an issue with Taichi. And then later on in the episode, we actually see that her stalker, so the guy that she called a creep, the reason why she even had to leave JPX48 is because she called one of her fans a creep because he wouldn't let go of her fucking hand. So that same asshole, like, through the media attention, see guys, it all links up, because I said that the media being there at the admission thing was an invasion of privacy and there are minors present. And what do you know? So he got to see that I was going to COCA. So he literally goes to the school and he's waiting outside for her. How many hours waiting outside so he can talk to the same person that he clearly freaked the fuck out? And she freaks out. So then she runs back to the school. She runs to her uncle. This is the same uncle that's all her trauma, runs to that uncle, tells him what's going on. Sarsa says, oh, I'll walk back with you. And he was like, oh, like, thank you for doing that. That's also bullshit to me, too.
Okay, yeah, that did bother me, yeah.
How your fucking niece can go and tell you that her stalker literally found her and you aren't the one that are walking her back to her dorm. Like, yeah, her roommate can do it, but you can walk both of them back because they're both minors.
Yeah.
And this is a grown-ass fucking man, and you didn't go and walk your niece back to her fucking dorm? Are you serious?
Yeah, I was very confused why he just didn't do more, because it's not that much effort to walk somebody home. He could have done that.
He could have done that, and I feel like that just goes again to him just being overall lax. Giving her a key to go to your place, that's not shit. You should have fought for custody. When it comes to her running away from her fans and stuff, maybe you shouldn't play that shit off. She's clearly going through trauma. Why didn't you get her a fucking therapist? Then now this same stalker who got her kicked out of her group in the first place is following her, and you didn't, like, yeah. So I didn't like that. I thought that was fucked up.
Yeah.
Her whole family is fucked up. I'm sorry. I mean, Taichi, you're not as fucked up, but you're still fucked up in my eyes.
Yeah, he could be much better.
Yeah. But in any case, I was glad that Sarasa, you know, she held her hand. She stood up for her. And he's talking about how he wants to talk to her. And it's just like, she's clearly, literally shaking, hiding. She ran away from you the first time. So it's like, I don't know if this person, if this fan is just so obsessive that he just doesn't get it. But regardless, you're literally a grown man and you're scaring a minor. Maybe you shouldn't talk to her. I don't understand anybody being obsessed with, even if she's a pop star, with a minor to the point you're going to follow her to her school. What the fuck are you going to talk to her about?
Right.
And then holding the bag, right? And it's like, she's clearly like scared. So why didn't you just set the bag on the ground here? Sorry.
Yeah, and walk away.
Walk away. No, this asshole's still holding it. And meanwhile, I just ran away a fucking gen, which is the reason why it's like Tai Chi not fucking walking her in the first place was bullshit. But anyway, ran away again and left Sarsara to go and deal with this grown ass man. Which, I mean, yes, she's like bigger than most, but so much. But yeah.
She's still 15. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all that I had. Did you have anything extra? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to like take over that way.
No, it's okay. I had a couple more points about the mom, but it's just reactionary and it's nothing we really have to get deep into. Just the awful lie as she's leaving. Not so much lie. Guilt trip. As she's leaving, saying, you know, I'm working myself to death for you, right? Before she leaves on that shoot. Yeah. Like, shut the fuck up. You're not working for anybody but yourself. And I'm so glad that I realized that her mom loved working more than her. Like, it's sad as all hell, but I'm really glad that she at least realized that so that she can begin to heal after having that realization.
Right. The thing about it is, like, children don't ask to be born. So making them feel guilty for what you have to do to provide for them is fucked up because they didn't ask to be here.
Yep.
So you reminding them, oh, I'm working so hard for you. I'm doing X, Y, and Z for you. I'm putting a shelter over your head. I'm bringing food to the... That's what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Because this child didn't ask to be here. So you can't then turn around and then try to guilt trip them to feel bad about you doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Yep, yep, yep. And one last point about the mom, and then I'm done.
Yeah.
When Ai is scoped out to be a new member for JPX, the guy who's interviewing them, it's, you know, her and her mom are there, and there's the agent guy. He's like, your daughter is so lovely and perfect to be an idol. And the mom turns around and says, actually, I couldn't disagree more. I'm sorry. I just gotta, like, fuck you, bitch. No. Oh, my God. That is your daughter.
Right.
You're gonna say that about your daughter, that she's not lovely and perfect to be an idol? Shut up. She is.
Really? Like, at this point, why didn't she get an abortion? If you don't want to be a mom, you didn't have to be a fucking mom. And here you are being one. And, like, the way that I see it, even that meeting happening, obviously, I didn't ask for that meeting. So he went through her mom. And so her mom's forcing her to be part of this meeting. And now you're talking shit about her, too?
Right.
This episode was a lot, y'all.
It was so much.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I know that was, like, so heavy, you guys. We had to get through it. But that was episode 3 of Kageki Shoujo, and this was episode 13 of Shoujo Sunday. Thank you so much for listening to us and hearing us rant and rave, especially about this last episode of Kageki Shoujo. We're glad to be getting into a new shoujo anime, especially after Silent Voice. As much as we love it, as much as it is shoujo adjacent, technically, it is labeled shonen. So going back into the realm of shoujo is needed. So we're glad to do it with this show, and we're happy to learn more about it. Anyway, I would like you guys to please make sure to follow Shoujo Sunday on your preferred podcast platform, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podomatic, iHeartRadio, Audible, Amazon. Wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure to follow us and rate us 5 stars. So the more 5 stars we have, the more interested people will be in seeing what we have to say about shoujo anime and shoujo adjacent anime. Also, make sure to follow us across all shoujo.
It is shoujo media.
Right, shoujo media, yeah. Make sure to follow us across all social media. We are at Shoujo Sunday everywhere. And I am Chika Supreme. You can find me across all social media at Chika Supreme, and that is with a K, not 2 C's. Gianna?
I'm Gianna Luna, and you can find me at Gianna_Luna_ across socials, and that's Gianna with 1 N.
Okay, we will see you guys next week.
Yes, we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.